Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And welcome to today's In Conversation With podcast. I'm Georgie Corrigal, the founder and editor of Sherlock's. I've really been looking forward to this one for a while. In fact, I've been trying to line her up for an interview for a long time. And finally, here we are. Today, I'm joined by Catherine Parsons, co-founder of Decoded, a technology company on a mission to demystify the digital world. Having worked with the likes of Unilever, Nike, HSBC, Burberry, Citi and MasterCard, and many, many more, Decoded has taught millions of people how to code, opening up a whole new world of possibilities along the way. After campaigning for coding to be made a mandatory part of the UK national curriculum, Catherine's vision became a reality in 2014, making the UK one of the first countries in the world to make this change. It means that by 2025, a generation will leave school for whom this kind of computational thinking will be the norm. And it's hardly surprising then that she received an MBE in the Queen's Honour in 2015 for services to education. Wow, that's quite an intro. Welcome, Catherine from San Francisco. Thank you so much for fitting this into your busy schedule. Gosh, I mean, there's so much to cover. Can we go back to the beginning and just talk about your childhood, your education, just sort of bring us up to speed?
Oh wow! Right back to my childhood.
A little synopsis would be to understand, you know, what influences there were in your life, and
yeah, it was amazing in a way because I definitely grew up thinking there were no obstacles to women in the world and life, and you know, I think that was really influenced by my mother and my father. Both my parents are Irish. And they both came to London in the swinging 60s, you know, to come and kind of pursue their dreams. And my mum came as a nurse and my dad, he trained as an accountant. And I think they both didn't think that they would fall in love with Irish people in London, but they found each other and they're still married and very in love. And it's really wonderful. And my mum is just such a hard worker and so entrepreneurial, and she ended up eventually starting her own hotel in London, and I used to work in the hotel. So I just had a real work ethic from a really young age. And I also saw starting a business as something that a woman could do. You know, I grew up in London. I went to primary school in East Finchley. All I can remember doing there was sport and art and having lots of fun. And then I went to a school called Channing between the age of 10 to 18, which was a girls' school, which again, I never felt like I couldn't ask a question. I was never made to feel stupid. I was definitely made to feel like women could do anything they wanted. And I definitely gravitated towards subjects like physics and mathematics, but also I really loved languages. So I studied French and Latin and ancient Greek, and I loved codes actually, like so Morse code, and I made my own codes and any ancient language that looked a little indecipherable, I'd want to master. So I actually went into SOAS when I was 14 to study Japanese, you know, and wow. I was just a bit weird.
Do you speak Japanese?
Do not test me on my Japanese, but I did study it for 3 or 4 years and Mandarin, and I'm desperate to go.
Wow, I'm in awe of anybody from the West that can speak one of those languages.
It's just so beautiful because, you know, for me, languages were all about, of course, communicating, really important, but a lot of it was about really understanding entirely different mindsets and cultures. And especially with Latin and ancient Greek, you know, really understanding these people thought differently, they lived differently, and immersing yourself in those cultures and histories as much as the actual tools and languages. And it really does, you know, if you looked at my childhood bookshelf, it was languages, and computer games.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I thought, well, because a lot of people always ask me, how did you end up doing Decoded? And it kind of all made sense looking at that bookshelf, because it was like, well, I love languages and I love technology. Technology is just the language, and it's one that I passionately wanted to learn.
So you left school and you went to Cambridge and you read languages.
I did Latin and Ancient Greek at Cambridge, at Downing College in Cambridge, and it was just brilliant. And I'm still in touch with my professor there, and it was great. I mean, it was just this kind of place where you could really immerse yourself deeply in a subject. I loved the fact that it was study, but also debate. And Cambridge is such a kind of small and, you know, villagey environment. It felt really kind of like a safe place, really. But I was frustrated as well, because there was a big part of me that didn't want to go to university at all. And I wanted to start a business at the age of 18. But I think, you know, parents, the world, you know, being an entrepreneur was not going to make anyone happy at that stage.
Get a proper job. That's not going to, you're not achieving.
Yeah, you've checked out, you know, why wouldn't you go to Cambridge? You're crazy. So I was gnawing away really in the back of my mind on that. And
what was the business you wanted to start at 18?
Oh my gosh, you can imagine. It was everything from a website that helps people find, you know, it was kind of like early dots, wasn't it? There was this thing called A to Z Find that I worked on that was all about a review website, but it was a bit early stage, you can imagine. Right to East London real estate. I mean, those were the things.
Just something for yourself.
I wish I'd done them. Gosh.
Well, it all works out in the end, doesn't it? And so at university, so you were doing ancient Greek and Latin. Wow, I mean, that blows my mind. Was sort of computing and technology, was that at all part of your life or different?
No, it was not on my radar a lot at that point, beyond going to the computer room to do research, you know. And it really was those days, you know, you were lucky to have a laptop. And so for me, the real immersion came when I graduated. And I ended up getting a job at Condé Nast, actually. And
Latin, so, what else do you do with Latin and ancient Greek but go to Condé Nast?
Well, I think most of them become politicians. Aren't they all in number 10 Downing Street now? The whole classics department has populated the cabinet office. And they weren't real jobs. You know, you weren't really getting paid. And I certainly couldn't afford to sit around being unpaid for longer than a week. And I said to someone there, do you know a job that I will get paid for? And they said, go on, go build some websites. So I
Condé Nast said this.
Yes. So I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I sat there with this brief and managed to build a team to produce some of the first kind of travel websites. And it was before they even had the you know, they were just building their kind of tech team. And for me, it was great because it was my break, it was my opportunity, it was about problem solving, and it was like a mixture of creativity and design and technology. But you know, I still couldn't code. I was really kind of just assembling a team and inputting data really into spreadsheets to be able to create those websites. And what was amazing is they were still using them 10 years later. I used to go and check in on them and just see if they were still around. You know, if you think 2003, 2004, this was the beginning of, you know, technology beginning to really impact and change media, which is
absolutely
one of the first industries that got really impacted by it. Between the ages of 20 and 30, you know, I was really just going around doing my digital thing, creating websites and creating digital projects for media owners. I set up my own company with my current co-founder. We created an entrepreneurship award with a big technology category for a big media owner. We created a virtual world with Ridley Scott that we kind of launched globally, and I helped some of the multiplayer online games launch in Europe. And I was loving life, you know, having a great time doing all these creative jobs. And someone said to me, so you know how to code? And I actually thought, do you know what? I don't. I really don't understand the nuts and bolts, the ones and zeros, the languages behind the screen that are creating these things, which are just changing the world.
I did that, Catherine, and I went and did one of your courses because I was like, fuck, I don't know how to code. I'm running a web business and I need to know. So I've got is 1 day course. Actually, I referred to it the other day because we're about to re-platform. We were wondering whether to make any changes. And I said, well, that's just a pixel change, isn't it? And my marketing director went, yeah, it is. I went, if I know that, it's that basic, because I learned that in one day and that's all I can remember. Anyway, there was loads of coding to teach you.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted that you came on Coding a Day.
It was wonderful. I honestly mean that. It was so brilliant. And I've never had much patience for the amount of time it would take someone to do something. And I remember being like, you know, open bracket, but the, whatever, it did close bracket. And I was like, whoa, that's like the amount of code for one tiny instruction, like blew my mind. Anyway, we digress.
I'm so excited that you came on it, because there was nowhere to learn back then. It's totally changed now. You know, yeah. Like there's just so many places to learn. But I was shocked when I went online and realised I would have to apply for a computer science degree at some actually really niche-y course. I couldn't do that. I didn't have time to do that. I just wanted to be able to really understand. I wanted to be really fluent in this stuff. And you know,
so someone said, can you code? And you went, hang on a second. They've got a point. Was that the moment you said, I'm starting a business? Or was that, I'm going to go away and learn to code and I'm going to find that place?
First of all, it was, I'm going to go and learn. So I asked a friend who was a coder, and they honestly laughed me out of the room. They said, you could never learn, you know, like, this is not for people like you, which has been something I've really rallied against since then. Because
yeah.
You know, what, so many people, almost 50% of them have been female, incredibly diverse backgrounds. Anyone can learn this stuff. And like I said, you know, there were no online coding boot camps. That it was so really, I just said, okay, can we create this Code in a Day experience? Yeah, I honestly thought 100 people might do this. And it just exploded. You know, I think within 3 weeks, we were just all over the news and the media, because people thought it was being a bit ridiculous. You know, we really did want to condense a year's worth of, you know, you being left by yourself at a computer trying to learn this stuff into a day. And we wanted people to feel at the end of it, maybe that we triggered a lifelong passion to become a coder. But more importantly, that people felt unafraid. This was something that they could understand and learn, and fluent in a lot of the terms and technologies. And it really achieved that mission, because we had no marketing budget. I often joke that we had a £27 marketing budget. So I remember seeing that on our first annual like spreadsheet. I like that small number. What is it? And they said, that's your marketing budget. I just laughed so much. You know, it was like, it was kind of a word of mouth sensation. And you know, I just dropped everything with the team, and we focused upon this when we had the board of this huge company in South America. The CEO got on his private jet and flew to London to sit in a room with us learning coding. And I was just like, we've struck a chord here.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
other dark arts can we decode, and how far can we take this?
Can I just go back, Catherine? So sure. You went and your friend taught you to code. How quickly did you pick it up? I mean, you're obviously mega bright.
No,
and
that's the point. He wouldn't. He said no. That's the thing. It was no one would teach me.
So no one would teach you to start the business. Is that how it went?
So that's
and when you started the business, could you code by then?
No. So that was the day.
Can
one
you code now?
Well, yes, absolutely. But do I sit there coding every day? No, but I will get deeply involved in the development of all our new products. So cybersecurity, for example, I will be sitting there with the team as we're learning how to replicate the exact hack that was done on certain businesses. And I think I will play the DE part of the decoded bit. Mm-hmm. So we'll just go through quite a painful and long process on all product development. Coding a Day took a year. We just developed a suite of products that took 2.5 years to develop. And we will just go through every day working on being able to represent that knowledge in a way that you could successfully teach someone, typically from a level of zero knowledge. But we do much deeper skills programs now. I mean, Coding a Day feels like 100 years ago.
I was going to say that it's incredible how you've evolved. So you started a business, you had your £27, and you know, you say it's word of mouth, and you got some great press, I remember. And it was kind of bonkers, and yeah, it was bonkers, but brilliant. I remember thinking, God, this is so brilliant. What was the moment? I mean, was it that guy getting on the plane? Was it that press? What snowballed things?
It did just expand very, very quickly. And there were lots of different directions in which we could have gone. And I think that that was the tricky bit, really focusing in on where are we going to be excellent. And that, like, we've got these kind of values that we set as a business, and we're very values and purpose and mission led business, you know, very kind of close knit team. And we decided that we felt we could be the best in the world at what we do, and have the most impact on people's lives and the world around us if we focused upon this professional space and businesses. And really, you know, rewiring business for the future, culturally changing organizations so that it becomes the norm that people are learning and reskilling on the job and giving them learning opportunities. And also really equipping people with the tools and technologies and skills they need to be more efficient, faster, stronger, better. And so it was that ability to focus, which is almost an intangible thing, you know, that's just a strategic thing. You know, a decision was made that we were going to be the best in the world at that. And we went and raised money. And I think raising money does change, you know, commits you in a way to that business plan.
How old were you when you raised money?
We'd probably been going technically probably 3 or 4 years, but I think, right, in reality it was probably a year from doing our first Code in a Day workshop. And it was, unsurprisingly, it was the businesses that walked through our door and experienced the product and really enjoyed it. They all approached us kind of interested in the business, and we went with Guardian Media Group as our first investors, and they're sit on our board to this day.
Amazing.
That's
cool. That's a nice 360, isn't it? And you raised money. How did you raise money? From who? Can you tell us a bit about that story?
Yeah, it's something that I've learned so much about as well in the last 10 years. And especially, we're quite a tight-knit group of female entrepreneurs, and we do talk to each other very deeply about the fundraising process. And the game has changed massively in the last 10 years. So the way I fundraised 10 years ago is not what I would recommend necessarily for a female entrepreneur starting today. It was just a smaller environment. You know, there wasn't a lot of places to go for your seed capital or your Series A. I was such an evangelist for what we were doing. And, you know, naturally, our customers were also investors, especially kind of trade investors, you know. And so those conversations opened up. But, you know, what I think the real challenge is for a lot of entrepreneurs today is building those networks and seeking those opportunities. You know, it is hard work finding the right investor and the right money for your business. Mm. And they really passionately believed in what we were doing as well. So this was not just an investment on we expect times 100 return in 10 years. Mm. You know, GMG in their value statement are all about impact and education and mission. And they just fundamentally were passionate about the business. And so I feel that I got a brilliant investor, supportive, a really fair deal. And we used that money to expand globally. So to expand into America, to expand into Australia, have a small team in Amsterdam. And we also used it to expand our product suite. We actually went crazy on the product. So we did quantum computing, data visualization, you know, AI, all lots and lots of different courses, even like storytelling. And that took us to teaching in 85 different cities across the world, physically getting on planes, teaching boards, leadership teams, graduate trainees across every business you could possibly imagine.
Who was your first major client when you're like, whoa, this is not just, you know, my mom? Who was the first big guy?
There are so many that I really cherish, from the first person who brought a team of people from a company on the course. I remember that, you know, it was a company called Hill & Knowlton, and it was a lady.
Oh, I know that name.
Yeah, Candice Kirsten, I'll never forget her. It meant so much because you've got this promise that you're like, look, I've got this thing and I think it's amazing and I think it's going to transform your life. But until somebody actually buys it, the belief isn't there. So when that first buyer comes along and they buy your product and then they evangelize about your product, really all the next challenge is to get 1,000 of those same things. And then it begins to take on a kind of trajectory almost of its own. But I think clients which really changed the game for me were clients recently, for example, like Marks and Spencer's, hugely visionary about how they want to transform their business and how they want to really modernize, and you know, and they care so much about the people who work at that business. And they're just incredibly visionary of them to decide that as part of their suite of what they were doing to digitally transform Marks and Spencer's, they were going to implement a huge program of learning for everyone in the organization, and not just, you know, the leaders and not just the specific people. This was about preparing everyone in that business for the future of retail.
And when was this, Catherine? What year did they become a client? Because I think we stereotype Marks and Spencer's as, you know, quite an old school business, but it's really interesting to hear that, isn't it?
And yeah, they came about three and a half years ago. And for us, doing work at that deeper, more strategic level, for me, is wonderful. You know, this is about really giving people qualifications as well as just, you know, the kind of leadership training.
And you get that, do you? Can you come and get a qualification from Decoded now? That's the extent.
Yes, we'd done so much great work in this mindset space, you know, changing the way that people talk about technology, their literacy and understanding of technology. But fundamentally, if you couldn't fuse that also with the people that were able to build and create, you were going to have a barrier. And we were just asked over and over again by our clients to do this for them. And so before COVID happened, already there was something like a 20% data skills gap across industries like financial services and healthcare. That must be so much worse now with what's happened and the disruption to, you know, higher education. And so there's this massive pool of technical talent that is currently unfillable by business globally that they are desperately seeking. And they're just not coming out of university in the quality or quantity that businesses desperately need them. There's something like a, again, it's pre-COVID figures, you know, that gap just for advanced analytics experts, it stands at 2 million roles in America, in North
Tell
America.
Tell me about it. We're looking for one of those. If you find anyone, send them my way. Good luck.
You might need to come on a data academy. That's why we built the data academy. And it was designed so you could do it on the job, at work, and you could fund it in lots of different ways. And so, you know, you could either fund it directly as a business or use some of the government levy funding to fund it. And we started with this kind of advanced analytics experts, and now we're taking it into deeper skills and lighter skills. But wow, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you, it's just been such a roller coaster the last year, and what's happened to the economy and jobs and
the 20s boom is creating a massive hole in the workforce, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that we really need to rethink lifelong learning and, you know, who these new skills are for. It should be for everyone. You know, I think that ethos of from 7 to 70, anyone should be given the opportunities to learn new ways of working, new tools, new skills, and creative ones too. You know, just because I have to code, it doesn't mean I'm not passionate about things like confidence and public speaking. And, you know, it's not just all
but
about
put those things together, and it's so powerful. I've got a cousin who worked in publishing, and she applied for, it was a year course that's highly selective. She's very bright, and she was taught to code. It was a year course. And she had these amazingly creative skills and was an amazing people person. And, you know, you put that together and she qualified, and they sort of said, we don't really know where to put you. You know, you're not this stereotypical tech person. And actually they sort of put her front of house almost, but she had this technology skill set and this sort of people skill set. And that was just so powerful. I mean, now it's way more commonplace, but I'm talking sort of nearly 10 years ago. And it's so exciting, isn't it, to fuse those two things and totally blow the stereotype out of the water. I think it's
so amazing. Important because you're, for some reason, we've still got a curriculum that was designed 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Catherine, I mean, it literally kills me that they're still learning capital cities. I mean, they've got Google for that, for God's sake. I mean, my 10-year-old, first question I asked, I went around her school when she was four, was like, do they learn to code? And they were like, no, not yet. I mean, there's an extra club. But yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? It's totally nuts. To teach you French, which no one will speak when you go to France. I mean, that was a waste of time from someone who did a French degree. But, you know, coding, well, maybe there's a club. You know, they, anyway, it's madness. It's madness. Can we go back just a little bit? I mean, I feel like there's so many things to ask you, but did you face any adversity? It feels like this is just such an amazing success story. I mean, and you are, I mean, the awards that you've won and the, you know, the MBE, it's really just so inspiring. It really is. Was it all plain sailing? Was anything hard? How lovely that it isn't always hard, because life's hard enough. But were there any challenges along the way?
Very bad of me to present it as just a wonderful growth story, because
no, we're here to inspire people today. Yeah. So no, that's what we want. We don't want, like, don't do it, you'll work every hour of the day and never have a friend again. But, you know, we want female entrepreneurs, we want entrepreneurs in the world, but yeah, were there any moments when you were like, oh, this is sketchy, or
everything that you read about and heard about, I faced, you know, personally, face to face. You know, one of those things, like, what don't they teach in school? Resilience. I think you need phenomenal resilience to do the journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, off entrepreneurship. And I, do you know what? It doesn't need to look any which way. I think it really does need to work for your life and what you want. But it has been incredibly emotionally challenging. No one's ever going to tell you you've done a good job, you know, in a way. Like, you've got to just, or that you're doing the right thing or making the right decision. And you get lots of different bits of advice, and competitors crop up all the time. And I see this happen a lot with startup entrepreneurs, especially women, actually, which really grates me, which is this idea of giving people 99 reasons why they shouldn't do something or why they're going to fail. You know, we're telling people there's a million and one competitors out there. And, you know, I do think about the slogan of one of our clients often, like, just do it, you know, just do it. If you want to do it, just do it. The name of a talk I give is Permission to Learn. And everyone said, it's not that snappy. But I just was like, but this is the message. If I hadn't given myself permission to learn about coding, if I'd listened to what everyone had told me, don't do it, you couldn't do it, and there's nowhere to learn, and you, why would you do that? Then I wouldn't have done the last 10 years of my life. And I have that to this day. You know, I will want to, you know, expand in a certain sector or a market or create a new product. And you'll just face a lot of challenge. You know, I've been learning to be an entrepreneur really in the last 10 years. You know, I didn't know what I was doing at all at the beginning, and I still probably don't. I'd say I've made it sound like a very, very smooth story, and it has been a growth story, and I really don't feel we've even got started. And like you said about, you will have to readjust your life goals around the business potentially, you know, if it's going to be the number one focus of your life. And I think that can be very challenging for entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. Can we just go back to school? You essentially got coding onto the national curriculum. It's still a dinosaur, but it's slowly modernizing what it has in that sense. I mean, was that an easy process? I mean, it makes such sense, but I mean, that's an amazing achievement without pointing out the obvious.
I think the UK should be really proud of itself as a country for doing that. And sometimes, having traveled quite a lot, I get to see what other countries think about the UK. And actually, the UK is really hard on itself about so many things that other countries look at us and think we do really, really well.
That's nice to hear. We're so self-deprecating, us Brits. We should.
Definitely. And one of them was the code on the national curriculum. You know, I barely hear anyone talk about it in the UK, but globally, people are going, how do they do this? What does it look like?
So that's not happening globally in Western countries. I mean, I would understand if in other countries that are less advanced, you know, they weren't
there. There's a real appetite to copy the UK and do the same. And, you know, I've often gone out and talked people through kind of what the curriculum is and what worked well, what didn't. Now, it's a great curriculum, actually, and it is very much about computational thinking and getting really hands-on. And I think it starts at about 7 years old. But I think one of the biggest challenges has been really creating the support for teachers and support for schools to be able to bring it alive in the classroom. You know, it's an art form being able to teach, as we know, you know, technology in the classroom.
Dry.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, most people, I kind of put up a picture of, you know, make them think about what was the most inspiring education experience you ever had in your life. How many people are going to go back and think about their IT teacher? I mean, it does suffer from a little bit of needing a bit of a rebrand. But, you know, we need to be patient. We need to wait till 2025 to really see the fruits of that labour, I think. But I think it's a move in the right direction. I think the more support that can be given, oh gosh, especially in the last year, all the support that can be given to teachers to just do what they do and do it as well as they possibly can needs to be done. So tools and lesson plans and online resources. In that first year, we offered free lessons for every teacher from, you know, a state school, and we also kind of published all our code materials for free online.
Amazing. Do you do courses for children?
We don't, and we have done a few kind of summer camps.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, where's the summer camp? My children have got 10-week holidays. I'm ready to sign them up.
But honestly, those first few years where anyone was allowed to walk through the door, I remember this one session where we had this kind of like 7-year-old kid sitting next to the CEO.
And no way! He must have, the CEO must have loved that.
It was very exposing for everyone because everyone was just like, this is obviously the wunderkind, you know. And but it's such a great leveler, you know, technology in a way, because none of us have learned this in classroom. We all are like a 7-year-old, you know. And so I'm slightly of the philosophy you can really mix it up and put lots of different people in the same room. But I spend a lot of time helping people and point them in the right direction in terms of the resources they can do for code clubs. And a lot of this stuff is online now in terms of the code clubs. It's just a different environment. There are probably 1,000 places that you can learn code with your kids now online, which is just incredible.
Yeah, it is. On the subject of children, and as a mother, I'm like really interested in this answer. But, you know, there's digital moving so fast and technology moving so fast and AI moving so fast and such a competitive world out there. And it's interesting you talk about the need for the creative. You know, I literally couldn't give a crap at whether my children were good at French at school or whatever it is. You know, yes, you need the basics and be able to read and write and add up, but actually I want to really drive them to discover where their creative skills are, because everyone has some, and I believe that's the only way they're going to make it, frankly, in such a competitive world. And I wish that the curriculum taught saving money and branding and, you know, all these other areas of life that I feel would be so much more useful. Than what do you think, having done this amazing work and with the curriculum, what do you think, if there are other parents listening, are important skills or areas of what you do that they should help their children pursue? What are the skills you think are really important? You talked about quantum computers, you talked about, you know, other things. Are there things that you think are really going to equip them well for the future, aren't going to be replaced by AI?
I've got to kind of lift the bonnet on a lot of businesses globally and really see how they're operating, what the capabilities are within those businesses. And if it's any reassurance, most businesses seem to be being run on a spreadsheet and no more exciting technologies than, you know, a few emails. And we're at the cusp of now all but the technologies that to change the world beyond our imaginations actually do exist today. And I think the gap that we're going to see crossed over the next 10 years is the application of those technologies to the world. And for me, that's a renaissance. You know, that is the technological renaissance, and lots of people calling it the fourth industrial revolution, whatever you want to call it. And so to your point, you know, how could you design a curriculum to prepare people for such an unknown future? Some of the most innovative schools around the world are doing that very creative problem solving route. You know, it's really about nurturing the individual's potential for learning, learning at speed, accelerated learning, and learning a diversity of different skills pointed towards problem solving. So creating curious minds that actually have a passion for learning. And I call it kind of Leonardo da Vinci style. He had a lot of different tools that he would use to create and solve problems. And he didn't really matter which ones, whether it was a paintbrush or whether it was mathematics, he would use those tools creatively to solve the problems. And we're in this incredible problem solving decade, you know, whether it's the next pandemic or whether it's sustainable energy or just the huge operational efficiencies that could be made across the world. And the most powerful tools that exist to solve those problems are creativity and technology combined. And so I do think a great curriculum is a freer curriculum that allows children to really embrace their potential to learn in so many different directions.
Oh, so wise. So clear as well. It feels so clear, you saying, you know, those two things. It's like, yes, that just makes perfect sense, doesn't it? And can you just talk a little bit about how you see people who don't work in the tech world or think they don't? We all live in this digital world. Why you believe that code, that technology is important for every single person and that everybody that works could benefit from this? Because I think there's, you know, there'll be people going, oh well, I don't need to know that because that's my job, and I presume you really fundamentally disagree with that.
Yeah, I suppose I do. Until recently, in a way, no one's ever been forced to go on any of our courses. I think still that we're doing it now, maybe some people have been, and it will change things, but I think it's really important that people want to learn it. Success in learning a curriculum is directly correlates to your ambition and enthusiasm for learning something. And we got a great example of a learner that I won't mention the company, but you know, this person was working in an insurance company and they were very traditional skill set. I would say, you know, they did emails and phone calls and they're in their 40s as well. And that person said that they wanted to go work in this new exciting part of the business that was all about data science and artificial intelligence. But they didn't have any of the skills. So they said they wanted to come on one of our courses. And they were told they couldn't because they didn't fit the brief, you know. Well, there was limited resources, so only a number of people could go on it. And, you know, right. He didn't have kind of the coding skills required, etc. And like I said, it wasn't kind of a total beginner's thing. But eventually he was allowed on the course and he was phenomenal. And you know, he wanted to learn this so much. And 6 months later, he'd gone and got a job in the data science department of this business. And we got this email from him saying, you gave me an extra 10 years in my career. So what I don't ever like seeing happen is when people either exclude themselves from something because they don't believe they belong in it, or someone else excludes you from something that you want to be part of.
Sure.
And I do think a lot of people in traditional industries or creative industries or who didn't study mathematics or whatever it might be at university, both self-exclude themselves or are told, you know, oh, you could never learn this. And I just think that's unfair. You know, do we want to write off a whole generation? 50% of jobs are going to be replaced by machines, minimum. So are we saying, oh, we're just going to wait, we're not going to give opportunities to everyone to realize their incredible potential at, you know, becoming something new? And that frustrates me. And so something that I was working on when I joined the board of the Department for Business was looking at things that were happening in Singapore. For example, they've introduced a skills fund that they've had for years where anyone can draw on it, you know, $500 or more to invest in their own lifelong learning. I just love the message it sends. It sends a message that we believe in learning. And we trust you. And we trust. Yeah. If we gain money, you'll spend it.
And we all gain. Yeah, exactly. We all gain. Just to your point of 50% of jobs that we lost to AI, for people who are listening that are like, oh my God, I'm screwed. Like, I presume you see that then creating other roles, and that in turn opens up other parts of the industry, doesn't it?
Definitely. I think those jobs that are most susceptible to automation, they are very traditional looking roles, let's say. And what is emerging is this much more kind of new role, hybrid role. And a lot of people say that actually that research saying that 50% of jobs are going to be replaced by machines actually is a bit misleading, because it's actually 50% of your role will be replaced by machine. What we see happening is, you know, one of our learners, for example, they were learning Python and they applied these new skills to a task that used to take them weeks to do. And they automated it. And so it's taking seconds. And now what happened? Were they suddenly out of a job? No.
No, they can see more clients and they can, yeah. Before we finish, I mean, what's a good career to pursue? 15 years ago, if you had the benefit of foresight, you'd say, learn to code, you know, the world would be your oyster. Is it still that?
Yeah, if I was starting my career from scratch, I'd be really looking at where are the exponential growth industries, where's the future? And I'd want to be part of the future, you know, and whether that is satellite technology or quantum computing or even e-commerce or cybersecurity. For me, the exciting stuff is really being part of where the world is going and not where it's been. And, you know, just be part of the future, if only for the journey and the fun of it and the exploration and the innovation. I truly believe we're living at this incredible moment in time. You know, they'll look back in 100 years at the revolution, technological revolution that was happening right now. And if you're starting your career, you can really be a part of that.
Two very quick questions. You've mentioned quantum computing. I've no idea what quantum computing is. What is quantum computing?
They're massive, massive supercomputers that cost way too much money for anyone to have in their home, but they can process an incredible amount of data at any one given time, which will just transform the world if it ever actually reaches a point where it can be applied as a technology globally. It's still kind of the thing that you'll have in a physics lab and Google.
Got it. It's what a computer looked like in 1984, basically.
Exactly.
As soon as we're done, I'm Googling quantum computers. And you've mentioned cybersecurity a few times, that this is obviously a big focus for you. Just a few words on cybersecurity and where you see that going.
I think as our worlds become more digital, we become more vulnerable and easily exposed. And so, you know, the number of cyber attacks that are happening against companies and individuals and governments has really skyrocketed in the last few years. And as an individual, the best thing you can do is be aware and really use a few tools to make sure that you're, you know, using strong passwords. And a lot of our cybersecurity training is simply about behavior change. It's about getting people to use secure passwords, but we do it through the medium of actually showing people how to hack into things, which is highly entertaining, could potentially make people a little bit dangerous, but we never teach enough that we could actually turn someone into a hacker, I think.
Just before we finish, what's been your highlight? I mean, that's a really big question, but, you know, an MBE's got to be up there. What are you most proud of without saying enabling everybody to code? Like, what's the moment where you've pinched yourself and gone, oh my God, because one can only hope that you stood back and go, fucking hell, I've done all right.
When I meet you and you said you've been on a course and it kind of did something different and it made you think differently or do something differently, that for me is the highlight. It's when you reach a point that you actually think you've put something out into the world that has positively impacted people's lives in some way. Like, I saw some of our learners put their certificates on LinkedIn, and I feel really lucky to work in learning. You do get that feedback all the time. But honestly, God, if you'd asked me what I'd be doing at 30, at 28, I would not have imagined that decoded, you know. I do pinch myself. I feel very, very lucky. And, you know, we describe the team as a family, and it's been just a joy to work with such an incredible team and great people. And I've achieved far more than I ever thought I would. So there we go. show.
Well, what a nice place to be. Catherine, you are awe-inspiring, and you know, I salute you, and amazing. There's so many more things. I'm gonna literally be so cross with myself that I didn't ask you X, Y, and Z. I'm gonna wake up in the night thinking,
well, thank you so much. You've made me feel like I need to get cracking on like a kids coding camp.
You do, and I'm there. I am literally with poised, ready to sign up. So let me know when it happens. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
For people that want to code, I hope we've struck a chord. You know, get on over to Decoded.
Anyone can do it.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you so much. That's it for today. If you enjoyed that, then do please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends to listen too, and we will be back soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.